previously on Unsolved.
We have a statement from a 20-year-old female friend in the home that evening that she left my shell out that evening.
Do you have any idea why?
No, we have no idea other than the fact that she maybe became annoyed because she had not been picked up at this time and handed the girl the purse and just opened the door for her.
This girl was babysitting for Michelle?
No. She was visiting at the Amanda's home at the time.
Okay. Why hasn't it come up before this, do you think?
I don't know.
For the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, I'm criminal justice investigative reporter Gina Barton. This is season 2 of Unsolved, A Toddler's Death, A Tangled Trail. From the beginning, Jan Manders suspected that Joe Mueller had something to do with Michelle's disappearance. Jan was friends with Joe's wife, Terry, who was at the Manders' house the night Michelle vanished. Jan says when Joe dropped off Terry that night, he asked Jan if he could borrow some money. She said no.
A payday for me, and the people upstairs had just handed me their rent money as well. So Joe knew I had money. And he did ask to borrow some, and I told him I couldn't. I had bills to take care of.
Did he seem angry when you told him he couldn't borrow money?
Yes, he was. He seemed angry. I just thought, I can't help it. Can't do it. He just thought I had money I could borrow. I don't. I got responsibilities with my kids and bills to take care of. It's not like it's free money.
Jan took the money out of her purse and put it in a drawer for safekeeping. The next morning, Michelle was gone. The police found the purse down the block with its contents scattered on the ground.
I was suspicious of Joe, I guess because the way he was upset about me not giving that loan for money, he knew I had money. And it dawned on me, he knew I had it in my purse. And I was just trying to piece things together myself. If he had to know what happened to my daughter, and he was just trying to make it all look like she wandered out of the house after he stole my purse, and trying to put pieces together to try to make like she did all this herself, and he took her. I don't know what he did with her, but he took her.
Jan wasn't the only one who thought Joe could be involved in what happened to Michelle. At the time Michelle vanished, Joe and Terry had been married about a year. At first, Terry stood by him, but eventually they divorced and she began to doubt him. When I went to talk to Terry recently, I told her we were trying to figure out what had happened to Michelle. One of the first things she said was that her dad always suspected Joe was involved.
And so why did your dad think that Joe did something to her?
I don't know. He just had that feeling. My dad did not like him.
Terry was Joe's second wife. He had married his first wife, a woman named Charlene Campbell, in 1974. I wanted to see if Charlene considered Joe violent or thought he was capable of hurting a little girl. Charlene was not easy to find. I found several addresses listed for her in Illinois, so we went down there and knocked on a bunch of doors, but no one had heard of her. I also found several phone numbers, but they all looked kind of old, and I didn't think any of them would be any good. But still, I called them and was in the process of leaving a voicemail on one machine when Charlene actually answered.
But I'm working on a story that I was hoping you would be able to help me out with. It is concerning a very long ago ex-husband of yours, Joe.
Oh, yeah? What about it?
Yeah, so...
I remember that.
We could come by there. It might be easier if you're willing to talk with me in person. I could kind of lay it out for you.
Yes, that would be fine.
When we got to Charlene's place, she told us she had had a stroke a few years ago. It affected her speech in a couple of ways. She talks really slowly now, with a lot of long pauses. She uses a pretty simple vocabulary, and sometimes she can't grab onto the word she wants to say. Sometimes she gets her pronouns mixed up, like saying she when she means he. Charlene told us she met Joe at a bar and he swept her off her feet. But after they got married, he changed.
He was almost bad. It seemed like right after I got married, from then on he'd hit me. Whenever he had a problem, sometimes if he's mad, he would hit me. Even if I didn't do anything wrong.
Shirlene also told us she and Joe had a baby together. That's why they got married, because she was pregnant. The baby, who they named after his dad, was born with a cleft palate, so he had a hard time taking a bottle and cried a lot. Finally, doctors decided to do surgery to repair his lip, and then he became a totally different kid. He was much happier, and he ate a lot.
I was trying to feed him, but he just couldn't drink a lot. So the doctor decided to do it, and maybe it'll be better after it cut together, you know.
Right, after it healed, after he did the surgery.
And man, he did. He wanted to eat all the time.
Shirlene told the police Joe once spanked the baby because he thought Joe Jr. was, quote, getting spoiled. At the time, the baby was only a couple of months old. She told us Joe was violent with her, but not with their son.
No, he'll just hurt me, not the baby.
Shirlene said once the baby got burned while Joe was taking care of him, but she said it was an accident.
The baby got hurt a little bit because Joe had the heater, and he got it right close because made sure the baby got warm because it was so cold, but he burned just a little bit. Wasn't too bad.
Because the heater was too close to him.
But I got upset. And Joey beat me, of course. So.
Then, when Joe Jr. was about 3 months old, he didn't wake up one morning.
And I just wanted to die. That's the way I felt, because I must have done something wrong, and that's why God took it already. Even though I was crying all the time, you know, it was my very first baby, and it had passed away.
Shirlene said one of the officers who came to their trailer was suspicious of Joe, but the other one wasn't.
Or that cop said that they had killed the baby, and I was sitting there when he said he killed the baby. But then the other cop said, "You are stupid, man. That's," and then he was telling why the baby threw up and passed away.
The cop who suspected the baby might have been abused was a sergeant, and he was overruled. The coroner didn't want to take the investigation any further, and said Joe Jr.'s death was sudden infant death syndrome. Shirlene told us things got worse between her and Joe after that.
And I was so upset. And Joe would tell me, The baby's gone. He doesn't... He's never there. You know, you've never had any baby. Well, then after that, he... I went home. I was out doing with somebody. He messed up everything. Everything was crashed. And I had checked my pictures, and he had taken everything. All the pictures that I had of the baby and stuff is...
Oh, that's terrible.
He had taken them.
The police investigating Michelle's disappearance found out about all this in a really strange way. Detective Kwame told me about it.
So when we were searching his storage bin, Joe admitted he picked up a gravestone from a monument company someplace one night, and he was storing it in his shed there, or his storage area, until he could get it engraved. So, you know, he admitted outright that he took that stone. Didn't tell me where from, but, you know, that he had done that. But Joe was concerned about putting a stone on his child's gravesite.
So the police talked to Charlene, and then they talked to the sergeant, who thought Joe may have been involved in his son's death.
It's my understanding from conversations I had had is that sometime when the child was put to bed, they wrapped him up, I mean, in a bundle, so it couldn't move, and then turned him to the side, the child to the side, and put a bottle in its mouth, and it was a very young child, and it regurgitated and subsequently died because of that.
Still, the sergeant told the investigators from the State Department of Justice that he had his doubts. The DOJ report that talks about the conversation says this, quote, "He stated that the medical authorities would not cooperate in an investigation into child abuse, so the matter was dropped." The police investigating Michelle's case became even more suspicious of Joe after that. They questioned him, but Richard Reynolds, the police chief at the time, told me they didn't get very far with Joe because he was so evasive. Detective Kwame agreed.
Joe would... He wasn't at all adverse to lying to his mother or to anybody. I mean, you could catch him with a candy bar in his mouth and he'd say he'd never eaten a candy bar in his life. It's, you know, he'd tell you one thing and then he'd tell you something completely different 5 minutes later.
Joe wasn't too hard to find. Pretty quickly, I found an address for him in Janesville, Wisconsin. You may have heard of Janesville. It's been in the news a lot in recent years because that's where House Speaker Paul Ryan is from. There used to be a big auto plant there, but it closed in 2009. After that, the economy in the area went downhill. Joe lives in a rundown trailer. One of the doors is impossible to get to because it's up off the ground and there are no stairs. To get to the other door, we had to work our way around piles of trash and bins full of beer cans. The smell was horrible, and it got worse after a woman answered our knock.
Hi.
Hi. Hey, we're looking for Joe.
Oh, he's not up yet.
Oh, okay. When might be a good time to... What time does he usually get up?
Well, that just depends.
There are a lot of different strategies investigative reporters use. Sometimes we're confrontational. Sometimes we act like we don't know anything, even though we really do. One strategy that has worked well for me when I'm dealing with people suspected of crimes is to tell them all the horrible things other people have said about them and then convince them to defend themselves. With that approach, it's helpful to come off as friendly and sympathetic if you want the person to talk. So that's what we did in this situation.
Just what specifically do you want with Joe?
Yeah, so I'm Gina, and this is Katie.
Okay.
I know this is really weird. Are you his wife?
Yeah.
Yeah, hi.
Oh, hi.
So we're writers from Milwaukee, and we're writing about this case that happened back in 81. And there are just a lot of people who have brought up Joe's name in regards to this thing. I don't know if he ever told you about it, the thing with the little girl and Terry and all that. And so people are saying stuff about him that we really want to get his side of the story on, because I'm thinking it isn't all true.
Mostly, probably not.
Yeah, so we figured the best way to figure out what's true and what's not is just to come and talk to him directly ourselves.
Oh, okay.
So,
just a minute, let me see if he's
okay.
Decent.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
A few minutes later, Joe came outside. He was willing to talk to us, even though he didn't know what a podcast was.
So what's this for?
So, we are working on a podcast. Do you know what a podcast is? So, it's kind of like a radio show, but it's not on the radio. People just listen to it on their phones.
Oh.
He was wearing a dirty t-shirt and holding a coffee cup. A couple of times, it almost flew out of his hand. And he told us he was exposed to radiation while he was working as a hospital janitor. So, he has some nerve damage. Joe told us he grew up in Monroe, Wisconsin, which is about 35 miles from Janesville and not far from the Wisconsin-Illinois border.
Okay. Were you close to your parents?
Huh?
Were you close to your parents?
Yeah, my dad. I never knew my mother until a couple years ago, but she died now. But I knew her for about a year.
Oh. So she wasn't around when you were growing up?
Well, she was to a certain point. Then my dad divorced her, threw her out first, because she was half Indian, or she was Indian, and he made her and I live in a chicken house.
What?
Yeah. It was halfway cleaned up, you know. It was kind of like a cottage. Yeah, that's when he decided he was going to get rid of her.
Joe told us he was mostly raised by his grandmother, and she tried to protect him from his dad.
It was kind of tough, but she'd always stick up for me.
That's good.
My great grandma, her mother. I was her baby. She didn't let him anywhere near me.
In September 1974, Joe and Charlene got married. Their son was born a few months later, in early 1975. Joe says he's the one who woke up to find his baby dead.
Now, I woke up that morning to go to work, and you know how baby mattresses are. They make a crinkling sound.
Uh-huh.
Well, the old filled ones did, anyways.
Yeah.
And I didn't hear that. So I went to check on him. He was stiffer than a board. And I woke her up about it.
Joe also confirmed what Charlene had told us. He said one of the cops thought maybe he had something to do with the death of the baby.
That cop didn't like me anyways. Sergeant Johnson.
Okay.
And the coroner come out there and made a remark. He said, Johnson, as long as you've been out here on a police force, don't you know what postmortem is or rigor mortis is? You know, that's where the blood settles to one side of the body. Turns like black.
Uh-huh.
Well, he thought that was bruises.
Joe said he had never trashed Charlene's house. But when we asked if he had a picture of the baby, he said no.
No, I get in a photo album somewhere. I don't know where it's at right now.
Okay.
He also said he never beat Charlene.
And did you ever, like, do anything abusive to her?
No. Worst thing I did to her, I got mad and threw a record.
Later on in the conversation, I asked Joe if that record hit anything.
No. Yeah, it kind of hit the wall.
After Michelle disappeared, the cops came around again and started asking Joe more questions about the death of the baby.
Well, I know they told the Manders a bunch of lies about me.
Yeah.
And then they tried to relate it to my son disappearing. Or he didn't disappear, he died from SIDS.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they tried to put all of the other, because I went to visit the Manders shortly after, and he asked me where his daughter was. I said, how the hell am I supposed to know?
So they were trying to relate it back to... Yeah,
they were harassing the hell out of me about it, the cops.
Mm-hmm.
I had nothing to do with it. I don't know, just because my son died doesn't give these cops the right to relate it. You know, they're making people believe the wrong stuff. You relate that to this, and they're going to think that same thing happened to my son. And that's not right. I don't know why people believe that crap. It's just like back in the old West. Just because a few things come up, they want to lynch somebody.
I told Joe we'd also talk to Terry, and that she seemed scared of him, even all these years later.
That's because those people made her believe that crap.
Yeah.
We were doing fine until she went into that group home.
When we asked Joe about picking up Terry from the Manders' house the night Michelle disappeared, he gave us a bunch of different answers. First, there was this one.
So when you had gone to pick up Terry that night before, right, Terry was over there, they were sewing or something, right? And then you
I don't know if they were sewing or not.
Okay, well, that's what she said.
Oh.
And then you came to pick her up later?
Not that I know.
So how did Terry get home from there?
Get home from where?
From Jan's house the night before.
Oh, I probably took her.
Okay.
Nobody else would have.
And then this one.
I didn't pick her up that night.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, she said you did, and the
did I?
Cops said you did.
And finally, this one.
So when you went to pick up Terry, did you take your car? Or did you just walk over there and get her?
No, I took the car.
More than once, Joe told us his alibis checked out, all his alibis checked out. But then he told us about one of those alibis that didn't actually check out.
I bumped some guy that was playing pool, and him and I almost got into it. And I talked to the cops about that, and the cop went over to check it out, and they don't remember me. Of course not. They're going to want to get involved in the investigation.
So they said they didn't remember you?
Yeah.
Even the guy you bumped into and almost got it into with? Huh. Did you go back and ask them about that? Why would they say that?
I don't know. Well, I don't remember no bartender. He said he didn't remember any squabble or a pool game.
Joe said he had never asked Jan to borrow money. He also said he didn't just randomly show up at her house that morning when she was searching for Michelle.
That morning, when her kid came up missing, I was supposed to help her with the laundry. I was supposed to drop Terry off at work, which is a couple blocks down. Then I had an agreement to help Jan with the laundry because she had her kids.
Mm-hmm.
I stopped over that morning, sitting there having coffee, and she started waking the kids up, and I thought it was kind of funny, you know. She told me to go in and wake Michelle up. She didn't say the rest of the kids, she said Michelle. Now, I don't know, I could be wrong, I don't know if she did it for the insurance money or what. But I just thought it was funny.
So then what happened? You went in there?
I said she wasn't there. And she didn't act that surprised, you know. And I got on the phone, I called the police. cops got there, they started talking crazy crap, and I left.
I don't have all the police reports in this case, but I do have the report of the initial call about Michelle being missing, and that call was made by Jan. Joe says he has nothing to hide, and that's why he agreed to take the lie detector test.
Do you remember taking lie detector tests?
Yep.
Okay, how many did you take? One or more than one?
I think it was more than one, but I don't know how many, all the other.
And do you remember, like, what they asked?
They kept accusing me of not cooperating.
Okay.
I mean, what the hell are you supposed to do? Sit, they got an arm cuff on you so tight, your arms falls asleep. And then you're supposed to sit there and take it.
Mm-hmm. Did you think they were going to arrest you?
Yeah, the way they came on.
Yeah.
The way they came across. They were driving me. The FBI came along and they drove me all over hell. They had culverts. Go on down there, Joe, and take a look and see what you find in that culvert. You know, all kinds of crazy. What the hell you expected to find in the culvert?
So they were thinking you were going to, like, lead them to where she was?
I think so, yeah. Sometimes I don't like that idea. They could plant somebody there.
So what did you do?
I went down and looked. And I come back up.
And what'd you say?
Nothing. I said, there ain't nobody down there.
So, after all the lie detector tests and interrogation sessions and checking on his alibis, the police still had suspicions that Joe could be involved in Michelle's disappearance, but they didn't have any evidence. Detective Kwame told me they took things as far as they could, but eventually they had to let it go.
What his knowledge about what happened that night would only be speculation on my part. I could speculate. He doesn't know anything of what happened. On the other hand, I could turn around and say, yeah, he was involved in it 100% from the get-go.
After the cops hit a wall with Joe, and after the private detective Michelle's mom hired hit a dead end with a sketch of a couple that had allegedly been seen with her in a cafe, Michelle's case went cold again. It stayed that way for 5 more years. And then a farmer walked into the sheriff's department with a tip about a serial killer. Next time on Unsolved.
Kelly Drew and Timothy Hack had been missing since they left a wedding reception in Concord, Wisconsin, August 9th. Their bodies were found just 8 miles from there at the edge of a cornfield near the town of Exonia.
John Simon told me he and the other neighbors suspected Ed Edwards right away. He drove a van that matched the description of the one the cops were looking for. But that wasn't the only reason.
He told us that there were some kids out on the lane, and he scared them, went up behind the guy with a gun and scared them off the property while they were fooling around.
From the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, this is Unsolved, A Toddler's Death, A Tangled Trail. Support our independent investigative work by subscribing to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Find the latest offers at jsonline.com/subscribe. You can find more online at jsonline.com/unsolved. Subscribe and leave a review on iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts. Unsolved is reported by me, Gina Barton, and produced by Katie O'Connell. The project was edited by Greg Borowski, with web design by Aaron Coy, photos by Mark Hoffman, graphics by Lou Saldivar, and video by Lou Saldivar and Bill Schultz. Our copy editor was Debbie Davis, with social media outreach by Emily Risto. Andrew Malika worked on interactive graphics. The news reports you heard in this episode came from WMTV, Channel 15, and WKOW, Channel 27, both in Madison.